Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome once again to Whiskey Congress. Hanging out at Steve's place tonight. And you sprung some pretty impressive whiskey on me, man. This is good stuff.
Right out of the gate, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the Kikkoman. Kikkoman. It is a 100% Islay whiskey. It's smoky. It's citrusy. It's light, but very, very like robust and strong at the same time. I'm a big fan. And, you know, there's no age statement on it, but it is a combination of some of their higher-end whiskeys all kind of blended together to give you a blend. So it's not necessarily, by definition, a single malt, but it is a blend of
single malts,
really good single malts. So we'll take it over here. But it's very good.
It's good. Glad you enjoy it. You know it's good stuff when, to back it up, you brought out Lagavulin is batting second to that. That says something.
Absolutely. It's Lagavulin 8, though. So.
Oh, well then. Well, I scoff.
Right.
All right, man. So a bunch of stuff to talk about this week. The thing I want to talk about first, because of the nature of our show, is the incident involving Seattle Seahawks defensive lineman Michael Bennett in Las Vegas. The way I heard the story, and I haven't heard this disputed, is he's at the Conor McGregor fight with Floyd Mayweather. After the fight, he's in a casino. A loud noise occurs in the casino. People mistake them for gunshots. Turns out there was no shooting. He, like most rational people, is concerned about his safety. He hides behind a vending machine, a slot machine or something, and then scans the premises and runs. Las Vegas police tell him to stop. He does so. They tell him to get on the ground. He does so. They then jump on his back, put a knee in his back, cuff him, stick a gun to his head, and tell him he'll blow his fucking head off if he moves. Now, I'm pretty sure you'll agree with me when that sounds a little overly aggressive.
Did you see the video?
I did not.
Okay. So I saw the video. And, I mean, the thing about it, the story, that's what happened. I mean, there was a loud noise. He ran from it. And then the police, I'm not sure what their rationale was for you know, jumping on him, arresting him, cuffing. Like, I don't understand what the, you know, I mean, is it like school, no running indoors? Like, I mean,
well,
I don't know.
I think their statement was that they thought he was involved. Duh. I mean, they're not like, you know, okay.
All right. Sure.
But, but yeah, the rationale for deciding why he was involved of the 100 people running, I don't know. I could speculate.
Really?
I could speculate and probably. Well, they come out and said race had nothing to do with it.
Nope.
So I believe them.
It was all pure size.
Yes, right.
Sizeism.
Right.
Happens
exactly.
To me all the time. Actually, it does.
Actually, it does. Oh, no, fair enough. I mean, look, he was probably running faster than the average Joe because he is a professional athlete. So, you know, if they had a reason to stop.
So wait. He is moving really quickly. We need to stop and talk to him.
Well,
we got an NFL team here coming to Las Vegas. If you haven't been watching Ballers, so
right, exactly.
Let's get him in for tryouts. I think it's, listen. Fortunately, one, you know, Bennett wasn't hurt.
Right.
You know, they didn't shoot him. They didn't kill him. You know, they didn't injure him in a way. Like, you remember Tabo Sevilosha? He's the Atlanta
player.
No. He's a basketball player. He played for the Hawks, and then a couple years ago, he was in New York with I think the kid from the Knicks, the Serbian kid, or not the Serbian kid. What's his name?
I'm not gonna come up with it. It's the Knicks. I don't watch the Knicks.
Oh,
neither does anyone else.
Yeah. Oh, white kid. Poop. Oh my god. And the worst part about it, this is a podcast. So I'm sure someone Porzingis.
Okay.
Got it. Anyway, I think they were in New York together and something happened Tabocephalosha comes outside, sees that
they
it's...
break his arm or something?
They broke his leg.
Broke his leg, okay.
They broke his leg, which, I mean, he's an NBA player and that's a thing. So, you know, they hadn't done anything wrong. They just... He and Porzingis came outside. They see either, I think, a teammate or a former teammate or another NBA guy. No. I remember now. There was a rapper who had... I think he had been shot. And then, but they knew him, and they just went to the police to ask what was going on. The police, like, flipped on him and said, back up. And they said, wait, we know that guy. And then they ended up arresting Cephalosha and then breaking his leg in the process.
Right.
Now, you know, with Bennett, it could have been a similar situation. Unfortunately for him, he wasn't hurt. But, I mean, it goes to, again...
He had a gun pointed at his head, though, in a tense situation. We've had guns accidentally go off, and I know you're not. I know you're not defending,
right.
But I mean, to me, if this goes down with just a sir, stop, he stops, you know, lay down, cuffs, that's an overreaction. I'm not defending that, but this is so far beyond the pale. I mean, to draw a weapon on a guy's head when he's complied is just such bad training. I mean.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, where I come out on this is, again, he's okay. I think it is excessive force by the police. I think that in that situation, you know, there's witnesses' accounts that say it doesn't make any sense. Everybody was running. Why did they tackle, arrest him, detain him? You know, why are they screaming at him? So, you know, that's something that they can't, and that's the other problem. Las Vegas police can't explain that aspect of it. There's no good explanation of it other than, you know, hiding behind, you know, you're not a police officer, so you don't understand, you know, that age old explanation. So, you know, I don't have a lot to say on it. It's not right. You know, I get the police and their, edginess in that situation. You have a sound that sounds like gunfire. You have a mob of people, but
you're in Las Vegas, so
right?
Crazy
and you're in
happens.
Vegas, right? I mean, that is where Tupac was killed. But I mean, to target Michael Bennett, it's bizarre.
And
right?
He wrote a letter about it that I thought was really well written and really well, you know, articulating his case for being upset. And then the LAPD, the Las Vegas PD comes back and says, hey, NFL, you should investigate Michael Bennett for violating the league's conduct policy. And the NFL pretty quickly said,
no.
And when the NFL doesn't want to investigate someone,
right,
there's nothing there.
Right. I mean, it's just, I mean, you know, I mean, Roger Goodell, you know, for all his unevenness and shiftiness when it comes to, you know, dealing with disciplinary issues, I think on this, he came out on the right side. He saw that there was nothing there. There's no reason to investigate the player. I mean, the story holds up. You've got eyewitnesses. You got even your own police department saying there was a loud noise, thought it was a gunshot, investigated. It wasn't. A lot of people were running. Where's, like, at
right.
What point in time does that become something where you need to detain him? What's crazy is, though, of course, you go to the bastion of ridiculousness, which is Twitter and comments and things like that, of other people. And there are people out there defending the Las Vegas police, like, well, I mean, he was running. They did tell him to stop.
As were 200. And he did stop, though.
Right. And it's just like, you know, had he complied, like, he did. Comply. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like, had he not complied, that would have been way messier. You know, I mean, we've seen him. We've seen what he can do to other well-trained NFL athletes. So I don't think he would have much of a problem tossing one or two, you know, LV police department or police, you know, police force members before somebody pulled out a gun and shot him. You know, or I mean,
yeah, it could have been bad. He did the right thing, and that's what bothers me the most about it is assuming his version of events is accurate, and I have no reason to doubt them. Then, you know, okay, you had a suspicion based on race in all likelihood or based in part on race. You issue commands. He follows the commands. You still stick a knee in his back and you still, you know, possibly pull
handcuff
a gun up. Handcuff him. I mean,
well, I mean,
just,
like,
just
so,
sir, stop. Oh, gee, you don't have a gun. Okay, well, thanks.
I, again, I don't understand. What was the point? Like, I mean, and I get you. You know, you don't have a good reason at that with everything that's going on, right? With the number of people that are running, what is your explanation for saying he's the person that needs to be detained? Right? Like, I just don't understand. I guarantee you, their explanation is we had to say stop more than once. And chances are maybe they did, and he didn't hear it because it's loud, it's in a casino.
And they're scrambling afraid, you know, because people, there could be gunshots going off.
If you've ever been in a situation where police are turning hostile towards you, and I've been in that situation, and you think that you're complying, and there's something going on where they don't think you're complying, or they're escalating for no apparent reason, it's a horrifying feeling because you're not armed. You don't have a bulletproof vest on. You know how over the last 5 to 10 years, you know the police are going to get the benefit of the doubt almost 99.9% of the time. So when that intensity level escalates, your heartbeat just intensifies to levels that it's probably never been
hummingbird
to before.
Level.
Right. I mean, because it's just like, okay, what the fuck is going on? What did I do wrong? How could I, you know, I mean, I've been in a situation where, you know, I just got pulled over because I didn't have my front license plate on my truck. And the situation intensified to a point where I ended up in the back of a police car, right?
Because, with a cop that had his hand on his gun, as I recall.
Yeah. I mean, I was just, you know, driving down the street, and he said, do you know why I pulled you over? I said no. And then that's when he thought that I was being non-complicit. Like, I'm not being non-complicit. I just don't understand why you pulled me over. I didn't know I didn't have a front license plate. Someone stole it in a parking lot or something. And, you know, like, now he's viewing me as a threat. And it's just like, all right, I haven't done anything wrong. There's nothing I could do, but there's also no way I can defend myself. You know, if this cop loses his shit and I do try to defend myself, then it ends with me getting shot, right? Because the cop's not going to be able to overpower me. It's just not going to happen. You know, with this particular officer, his only recourse at that point in time would have been to shoot me. So, you know, and I'm processing this while I'm sitting there with a guy with his hand on his gun. And, you know, he's yelling at me. So, you know, and then you're sitting there in the police car and you're like, what's going on? And then you start to worry, are they going to plant something in my truck? Is he going to, you know, like, what is happening? What is going on at this point in time? So Michael Bennett's frustration with this is clear and evident, right? He wasn't doing anything wrong.
And totally reasonable.
Right. It's not out of the ordinary. It's not like it was an isolated incident in a dark alley where it was just him and a police officer. And, you know, we're trying to figure out, all right, who's telling the truth here. I mean, it's Vegas, first of all. I'm sure there's a million camera angles. We know firsthand that Vegas is pretty good with their cameras.
We won't go there. we won't go there.
Mr. Fernandez, can you come with me?
Yeah, that's an inside joke that we cannot explain. But there's a few listeners who know what happened, and they will enjoy that.
So, you know, I think, again, grateful that Michael Bennett is okay. You know, I'm not a particular fan of his either way. You know, he and his brother are, I think that's an amazing story. You know, just two brothers that talented, both being able to be in the league for the amount of time that they have been. You know, one of them winning a Super Bowl. So it's a good story. Glad he's okay. You know, essentially, dick move by the Las Vegas police, and hopefully this spotlight helps
the greater
shift
cause.
Them
yep.
in a better direction. Right?
Agreed. And this was not the only case of police misconduct. And you know what? Again, here's where I come off, and I think we're on the same page here. We accept it's a tough job. We accept it's a scary job and a high stress job.
Although Mike Wood will tell you that it's not.
No, he said it was scary. He said it's not as dangerous as people make it out to be.
Right, that's fair. Fair.
So understood. But there's just certain things that there's not that are just not acceptable. When you don't need to be violent, you can't be. The number of times I've been angry at work I'm not going to physically lash out at people. Though I can't say it's never entered my head, but that's a zero acceptable number of failures to control yourself issue, as I said really awkwardly. And, you know, so I, you know, I don't want to sound like, again, we're not anti-police, but this is the sort of thing that should never happen. And more importantly, if it happens, there shouldn't be nothing, there shouldn't be the automatic knee-jerk defense of, well, he's got a badge, we're giving him the benefit of the doubt. This was just a failure by the Las Vegas police. If they would have owned it and immediately come out with an apology and said, you know, Mr. Bennett, the officers overreacted.
Very simple. That's it. Mr. Bennett, apologize. Officers overreacted in that particular situation. We'll work on training, you know, so that something like this doesn't happen again. You know, thank you for visiting Las Vegas and hope you come back. Boom. The end. Period. Done.
Right. Right. Not so hard.
You know, instead they say, well, you need to investigate him for conduct unbecoming of an NFL player. And, you know, when, I mean, just, okay.
That sounds, those words sound ridiculous to say, don't they?
Right. Well, I mean, especially in light of kind of what's going on with the league right now. But, yeah, I mean, like, there's, I think that's the other thing, too, with police departments is that, you know, a lot of this tension that's created between police departments and, you know, the different constituents that they deal with, the Pump King, okay, out of the fridge, Jim's doing a beer run, folks. Sorry. But a lot of the way, a lot of this could be dealt with if there was just a little bit more humility on the side of the police and a lot less defensiveness when there's a clear mistake that's been made. And the situations where it's very, very gray, I'll go as far as saying the Michael Brown situation was a situation that was gray. We don't have a camera. We don't have video. We don't have sound. We have, you know, different witness accounts that it, like, so that was a gray situation. So the police don't come out and say, you know what, we own it. We did, you know, we made a mistake.
The evidence ultimately supports the police officer's actions in that.
Right. I mean, so that makes sense. But in a situation where you have like Laquan McDonald in Chicago, right? You have a police officer
shot
that goes
walking
rug.
Away.
Right, he's moving away from the officers. The police officer shoots him 16 times with a bunch of officers standing around him, and not a single other officer fires a shot while the one cop is firing shots at him.
Okay? I remember when we talked about that the first time, we paused. I think there was 14 seconds elapsed between this first and final shot, and we went silent for 14 seconds just to be like, let's see what that sounds like. And it was
right. I mean,
amazing.
It's eerie how long it was, but I mean, Chicago police, I mean, now, mind you, we didn't see that video until 2 years after it happened, right? Like, so,
correct, yeah.
But, I mean, like, Chicago PD has got to come out and own that and say, listen, what the, like, they have
the
to talk
other
to
officers
the
on the scene should be saying,
right,
look,
Ro,
officer, I forget his name.
Right, like, you have to go, like, the, I mean, the senior officer there, other than him, if he was the most senior officer, someone in that situation has to go over to him, take his gun, put him in the back of the car, just like in the movie Seven, right, with Brad Pitt,
right?
Which is, I mean, but still, like, all right,
fair enough.
Well,
yeah,
clearly he did something wrong. Let's put him in the back of the police car. You want to support him, fine, whatever. But in that situation, like, that's what you have to do, and then the police have to come out and get right out in front of it, right, and say something. Something bad happened here, and we're going to figure out why, and we're going to make sure it doesn't happen again. You know, and that's the sort of attitude. If you saw like where they were willing to say we made a mistake, but we're going to fix it. It's not going to happen again.
I wonder. You know, so now let me just get a total engineer practical on you. The amount of money this is going to cost the Las Vegas Police Department if Michael Bennett files a lawsuit is pretty dramatic. I can't get in Michael Bennett's head. I can't say this with anything more than a suspicion. But my suspicion is, if they did what we just said and apologized and said, you know, that night, we were wrong, sorry, I wonder if he even writes the letter, much less files a suit. My guess is no.
I'll be curious.
I mean, it's a scary situation.
The Bennett brothers are relatively outspoken, and they're a little rough around the edges, and they are smart guys with just a ruffian sort of attitude.
All right.
And so I could see where, you know, in that situation,
maybe they would have.
I think he still writes the letter because part of it to him, too, is a pride situation, right? Because I think in the like even with a person like me, right, dealing with a police officer, you have a police officer who's talking really tough to you, but he's got a badge, he's got a gun, he's got a taser, you know, a baton and everything else. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, just take it off. Take it off. Take off your badge. Take off your gun. Let's just go into a dark alley. And whatever happens in that alley happens. And then we can get on with it. You know, I
that's
mean.
That's how Wyatt Earp used to solve things in Dodge City. But I don't think that's really practical right. today. Nor is anyone going to do that to you. Sorry.
Right. But I mean, part of that is that's the other part of it. Right. I mean, it's just like, all right, everyone. I mean, it's just like it's easy for you guys to be, you know, Billy Badass when you've got, you know, however many rounds and, you know, one in the chamber. But like, all right. So I just think it's that having to submit is the part that gets that when you do it and you still get treated shitty. That's the part that pisses you off.
Understood.
You know, like you stop, you do everything, you follow the commands, and you still get a knee in the back. You still get a forearm to the back of the head. Like, I mean, again, I've been in this situation multiple times. I mean, you know.
And so.
There's some Miami-Dade police officers who can tell you about it.
You brought up the movie Seven. In the movie Seven, Morgan Freeman talks about how in his, you know, 20 years career as a cop, he's never pulled his gun out. And Brad Pitt says, yeah, I did it once and I used it. So there's two cops with 30 years of experience saying they've drawn their gun once. As a kid growing up, I remember that being a big thing. Like, cops didn't draw their gun unless it's necessary. It seems to be becoming standard operating procedure. Gun out, hand on the trigger. And that's just really fucking dangerous. As a gun guy, I can tell you that they don't... I mean, the first thing they teach you... Well, there's a few things they teach you before this. But one thing is... Don't put your finger on the trigger unless you intend to shoot. Don't point your gun at anything that you don't want to shoot. I mean,
well, I mean, I don't think that that's changed. I just think the parameters for which, you know, putting your finger on the trigger, I think the parameters are, it's different. I think some of it is just the interpretations of what that means, when do you need to be ready to shoot and all that sort of stuff. Those things have changed because things have changed from just, you know, like there are more guns on the street now than by
True.
How many, you know, by how many percent, tenfold, yeah. hundredfold, whatever. You know, the inner cities are much more dangerous than they were in a lot of places, whether it's Chicago or Cleveland or St. Louis or Baltimore or what have you.
Or Las Vegas.
Or Las Vegas. Like there is more violence that the police are seeing.
That's fair. There are more guns on the street.
Right, because guns are more pervasive in the streets, I think that there's just, you have to be more aware. So I get it. It's clearly not safer for anybody, right? It's clearly not any better for anybody, and I think there's a lot of blame to go around there, not just the police.
So fair enough. I mean, so somewhere in Los Angeles, Mike Wood Jr. is hearing me, or about to hear me say that he was right about the prevalence of handguns being the real problem, but I don't want to say that, so I'm not going to admit it there.
Okay.
All right. Well, yeah. No, that's an illustration of it, and it's really semi-automatic concealable handguns, which I own and I'm glad I own, but I guess it's fair that cops now have to presume that that's the case rather than not. We'll get to that in a minute, actually, because that comes up in another story. But just back on the whole policing gone bad, did you see the nurse in Utah who got thrown to the ground and arrested?
Well, I did. And I actually...
Oh, that's right, you wrote about it.
Right, I put it on our website. You could go and find it at whiskeycongress.com. And, you know, I talked about this from a couple different angles. One... The police officer in this instance. Well, let's set the scene. Da-da-da-da-da-da. I don't know. That was me setting
the
scene.
I don't know. Okay.
Like, I don't know.
We'll get you a set the scene sound.
Ba-da-ba, ba-da-ba. So you have a person that was brought into the ER at the University Hospital in Utah, who was unconscious.
Right.
Brought in by the police. Police officer, detective, wants to draw blood, and the nurse who ends up getting arrested says, you can't. Hospital procedure, you have to have a warrant to draw blood on an unconscious patient, to draw blood on a patient that you either need their consent or you need a warrant if they're unconscious. The guy was unconscious, didn't have consent, didn't have a warrant, and was demanding that he was able to draw blood from this particular patient. Nurse says, hospital procedure, you have to follow it. And the police officer then arrests the nurse for obstruction, and not only arrests her, but like aggressively
roughly arrested her.
It, you know, puts her in handcuffs, hauls her away. And before that, though, he does, you know, he part times or moonlights as a paramedic, you know, and says, you know, if you don't let me do this, then, you know, I'm going to bring the crappy patients to your hospital and take the better patients up to, you know, General Hospital up the street. And, you know, so we'll get back to how that got him in a little bit of trouble. But he arrests this woman who's only doing her job. She's complying with her hospital policy. All she's telling him that, listen, you want blood from this guy, you need to go get a warrant. He doesn't want to go do it. So then he turns around and arrests her for obstruction, and just arrests her in a brutal fashion.
So again, these are one of those things that there should be no tolerance for. I mean, having a bad day, whatever. In this instance, he has no reason to be scared or acting out of, you know, adrenaline other than ego, right?
Exactly. I mean, this woman is harmless, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she's a nurse in a hospital working in the ER. I mean, I guess she could go crazy and grab a scalpel or something,
right.
But I mean, she was no threat to him. She was only doing her job, and for him to then arrest her, basically as a form of intimidation, is completely unacceptable.
And I mean, this guy, so we talked about the cop who said, you know, don't worry, we only shoot black people last week. He needs to get fired. This guy needs to get fired, right?
Absolutely.
Needs to go.
Right, absolutely. And what's amazing is that he moonlighted as a paramedic, but when the company that he worked for saw the video and saw him threatening the nurse with bringing bad patients to her hospital and taking the good patients elsewhere, they're like, well, that's a violation of everything that we stand for, and you're fired.
So the police have not done anything yet. Now, in fairness, they have procedures, but we're saying that the nurse had to follow procedures. They have a union. They have procedures. Fine.
Right.
But the ultimate result of this has to be you don't get to do this job anymore because you're clearly
unfit
to do the job. Yes.
The other thing I wrote about was, and I hate to do this, but I'm going to do it. I don't hate to do it. I want to
do
it. You have to wonder about that nurse and her coworkers, what their politics were. Because chances are they probably come out somewhere on the spectrum with all this, with Black Lives Matter, with police brutality, with you know, the thin blue line and All Lives Matter and Blue Lives Matter. I'm sure they come out somewhere. And if they're nurses, you know, there's a realistic chance that they may be married to a fireman or policeman or something like that, and they all tend to band together. Sweeping generalization statement. But
all right, thanks for saying that.
Listen, we live in Cleveland. There's 17 hospitals here, you know, and it's just like many of the nurses are married to firemen and policemen and whatever, you know, just
through or their around relationships. People who are.
Right. And so you have to wonder what the thought process is there, what her politics are. If she was one of those people that, you know, dismissed Black Lives Matter and was an All Lives Matter person and this whole sort of thing, and then all of a sudden, you know, like
she's on
the other side of it. You know, and then, you know, her coworkers or what have you know, people who were there, and then all of a sudden you see what a cop is doing in broad daylight in a hospital to a nurse, white woman,
a white female nurse, yes,
who's just doing her job, has no problem arresting her like a common thug in the middle of the day in a hospital while she's doing her job.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I guess you pose the question, if he's willing to do that in that scenario, could it then be possible, feasible, plausible then that a lot worse things happen in the shadows, in the places that we don't want to admit exist, you know, in the ghettos, in the urban centers, in the projects, in those places that, you know, are you know, commonly referred to by white people as no-go zones in cities. If, you know, you saw it firsthand in a predominantly white setting, what do you think it looks and feels like now in places like on the south side of Chicago, on the east side of Cleveland?
Where people who see it all the time.
Right.
Right. Where what you're seeing is an aberration is the daily life of other people.
Exactly. You know, and that's what you have to wonder is how those people are impacted by this and how they're affected and what, if anything, does it change? Maybe it's nothing. Maybe they already, you know, maybe they were all they're far left, you know, progressives or whatever. But I'm just, have to kind of wonder.
But also, Steve, how does it affect the million people that saw the video? Some of whom would have said,
Well, I mean, there were people. Well, again, you go to Twitter. The beauty of Twitter, man. You go to Twitter. The funny thing is, there were people on there. There were people on Twitter who said she should have just complied.
I'm sure there were.
Which is amazing to me. It's just like, you people are I have to applaud you. I have to applaud you and your.
They dig in and they don't give
right.
up.
Like, I mean, you are hunkered down low. So, it's and to me, that's what's scary. Right, is that you can put something that's clearly wrong right in front of someone's face, and they will still sit there and tell you, "Nope, that wasn't wrong. That was by the book."
By the way, not only was she—I mean, I guess technically she was not complying, but what she was not complying with was illegal.
Right. And right.
Had she said, "Sure, go ahead,"
she could have been fired, and then
probably would have been fired.
Right. Yes. So, I mean, that's that, for me, again, it puts it front and center, this conversation, it brings back to the front and center, I should say, this conversation of police conduct. Again, I support the police. I have always supported the police.
Sure.
Been fortunate enough to have, good relationships with police officers from a young age on. I still do. I think their job is very important, and because I know that their job is so important, that's why I think that they have to get it right. Because when they start to get it wrong, and because they are the line of defense between civilization and chaos, right?
Yeah.
Civilization and anarchy, to a degree.
To a degree, okay.
And so, but if they continue down a path of bending the rules and not following the rules and making up their own rules as they go and demanding a certain type of allegiance and demanding, that you, stand for them and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden now you're venturing into something else that isn't just, protecting and serving,
right.
It definitely goes down a darker road.
We talk about how, relationships between the community and, especially minority communities and low-income communities and the police need to get better. The first way to make that happen is make people trust the police. And you trust the police a lot more when you know that if they do something inappropriate, that they will be held accountable. And we've seen way too many examples where they're not.
That's the biggest part of this. That's what people aren't. It's accountability, right? You do something wrong, we're not, like, everyone realizes no one's perfect. But if you do something wrong, you kill someone, you beat someone up when you arrest them, you arrest the wrong person, whatever it might be, that there's some sort of repercussion for that action.
Or in an ideal case, there's an effort to make it right by the person who made it wrong, right? You arrest the wrong guy, you do your job, and rather than just do everything you can to convict the person you arrested, you look at the facts and you realize, oh shit, I got the wrong person. Now I'm going to go out of my way to make sure they get set free. And we talked about Adnan Syed in the Serial podcast in the past. They arrested him, and everyone involved in the legal process just said, we want to make sure he goes down. Well, they didn't do their jobs, and we know how that turned out.
Right. So, I mean, it just, again, bad job by the police in that particular instance. Hopefully the Utah, police department, they make it right.
Utah, yeah. I mean, it wasn't the Utah State Police, I don't think. But
it's
Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake. Salt Lake City Police, get it right.
Good, because you asked me to name two other cities in Utah. I could have gone Salt Lake City and Provo. If it wasn't those two, I wouldn't know what it was. Ogden, 3.
Oh, you're better than me.
So, this is a serious veer. But Cleveland made the national news.
We did it.
Yeah. And this kind of, well, all right, jumping into it. There was an attempted robbery at a Taco Bell that is really not far from here, even closer to my place.
And it's a Taco Bell that I have been to many a time on a late night.
It's a popular, I hate Taco Bell. I hate Taco
Bell.
You
are a sinner.
I've been told I'm a bad person for that. When I was in college, we had three choices in our student union: Taco Bell, Wendy's, or Little Caesars. And let's just say I ate a lot of fucking Taco Bell in college. And
okay,
I just,
so
anyway.
I mean, it's out of abuse.
Yes,
right? Like, so
abuse to my
everything,
internal organs. Yes, as I pound whiskey. But yeah, so anyway, these guys come into a Taco Bell, two armed men in masks, and they order three of the employees to get on the ground. They go to the cash register, and I'm sure to their incredible surprise, three other Taco Bell employees open fire on them, killing one of them, and the other one flees, I believe, unhit, and is still at large as far as I know. But two Taco Bell employees shot and fucking killed a dude.
Listen. Okay,
so three of them had guns.
Unbelievable. And so I wasn't aware of this. Like, my head has been in the sand this entire week, just busy with work. But
I've been on vacation.
We're gonna talk about that.
Staying on vacation.
So these three. So what I don't know. Were you able to look into this?
I could not find anything.
Okay,
I found the Taco Bell code of conduct. It was just for like vendors that supply stuff. I every time I typed in Taco Bell gun, I just got this story, and I didn't get it.
So that's my concern is, are the Taco Bell employees going to get in trouble, right? And what sort of trouble are they going to get into? I mean, because on the one hand, they're defending themselves. It's private property. They're defending themselves. But I'm pretty sure, I feel like I've seen on a Taco Bell, every Taco Bell I go into, like the, you know,
let me throw this in there. In the state of Ohio, if you have a concealed carry permit, you can carry your handgun concealed in many, many places. There's a few exceptions, and one of those exceptions is any business that puts a sticker on their door that says you can't carry a gun here.
Right.
So it goes from, if I walk into a Kroger that doesn't have that sticker and I'm carrying, I have a concealed carry permit in Ohio, I'm fine. If I walk into a Kroger, I don't know why I say Kroger because there's none of them around here, but when I first got my concealed carry, that's where I lived. Anyway, if I walk into a grocery store and they don't have the sticker, I'm fine. If they do have the sticker, I go from being fine to committing a felony potentially.
So, I mean, I guess the question is, did Taco Bell take the sticker off knowing that, because this Taco Bell
I believe the sticker says unauthorized persons.
Right.
So,
well, but this Taco Bell on 117th, right, like between Madison and Detroit.
Right. It's technically in the Cleveland side, but it's right on the Cleveland-Lakewood border. And for non-Cleveland people, sorry,
doesn't mean anything. But it's in an area where there's all sorts of crime that happens there. Most of the crime that happens there is DUIs, right? Most people get picked up for DUIs because people go and get hammered, and the police just sit there and pick them off like shooting fish in a barrel. So that's a large popular percentage of the crimes that happen in the area. But then it's, you know, a little shady over there. And so robberies, drugs, prostitution, all that stuff. It's not rampant, but it's not.
So just
you don't want
to
see your high school kid hanging out there.
Right. I mean, to set the scene, if you want to get on the highway from Cleveland or points east to go to Lakewood, which is a place that is loaded with bars and restaurants, you probably get off at 117th Street.
Right. And so but that Taco Bell, I know for a fact, has been targeted before. Police officers of mine that are in that district, police officer friends of mine that are in that district, sometimes they sit in that area just to kind of keep an eye on that Taco Bell to make sure that nothing happens there. So, you know, I think what happened, it sounds like you had three employees who kind of said enough is enough. We're not getting robbed. You know, it may have, you know, we get robbed, it has a negative impact on our, you know, month or our quarterly review.
Yeah. Or potentially, so, I've got to walk out of this place at 2 in the morning. I want to be armed. Right. I mean,
2 in the morning. I mean, they're probably later than that, right?
Right.
I mean, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning.
I mean, so you're probably a target. If you're an employee there, you're going to your car.
So, I mean, I think the fact that it was three of them.
Yes.
Three employees. So you got the dude back there making burritos, right? You got the person taking the order, and you got the other dude in the way back who's, like, doing the shells for the chalupas. And then someone comes and says, "Free, you know, give me all your money.
Give me your money."
And it's just like, you know what? Chalupa dude is like, fuck that. Nope, not on my watch.
Not on my watch, motherfucker. I mean, know what you're thinking, punk.
Right?
Does he have a chalupa or a 357 in his pocket? Well,
I'm curious to see what happens to the three employees, how if they're prosecuted and how heavily.
These guys are going to become NRA poster boys.
Probably not.
Oh, I think so. You don't think so?
No.
They're good guys with guns who stop the bad guy with a gun.
Are they black?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Well, oh, but I think even if they are, I think that this is good guys with a gun, bad guys with a gun.
Okay.
I know nothing about the ethnicity of
Of
the shooters.
But I'm telling you, if the shooters are black, they're not going to be the fucking poster boys of the NRA.
Let's suppose they're white.
Okay, sure.
I mean,
if they are white, absolutely.
This is one of the few good guy with a gun stops bad guy with a gun. And I think if they're black, the NRA ties into the, see, we're not racist. We're supporting these three guys. They killed a black guy, Steve. The NRA's going to love this.
That's not how the NRA works.
I disagree. I think this is one of those, this is a great look, we're not racist moment.
The
if they
NRA
are black.
Doesn't care about not looking racist, clearly.
Well, all right.
I mean, based on their whole response to Philando Castile.
So Wendy's. Okay. Now, I'll be curious to see how this plays out. It is, but I agree with you completely. The most amazing part is three employees at Taco Bell were packing, used their firearms in self-defense, killed one of the suspects. So maybe they should be cops. What are they doing at Taco Bell? They seem to be better prepared, and
here's the other. Here's the. I don't want to go. Joke, I don't want. I don't want to go.
That was a dickish joke. Don't take it seriously.
I know. No one was. The one thing though that you also have to consider is maybe the Taco Bell employees. Maybe this wasn't a robbery. Maybe this had something.
No. They said that. Well, okay. They said we'll see.
Okay.
But
right. I mean,
if they went to the cash register. There's probably videos. I'm sure we'll see them. I have not seen them yet.
Right.
So Taco Bell Cleveland, should we go to be continued because there's more to come out?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely will be curious to see again what happens if these guys are prosecuted, and again how heavily, you know, what they get charged with, and see how it plays out. So I'll definitely have to do some digging and follow the docket.
Now, to me, the funny part was that I said to you today, "Hey, we got to talk about the Taco Bell shooting," and you said, "What Taco Bell shooting?" And I started describing, you said, "What?"
Right. I mean, like, fortunately, I was stuck in traffic and I was driving. I was driving stuck in traffic, you know, going like 10 miles an hour. Because had I been going any faster, it might have caused an actual accident to add to the congestion on 90. So, it's a really bizarre story.
Finally, I had to scoop you. After the number of times you've beaten me to the punch, I was glad to be able to do that. So we'll have to follow up with the story and see where it goes. I predict that the NRA will be using this story as, see, good guy with a gun, stop bad guy with a gun. We'll see.
I just, there's no fucking way.
Okay. So given everything that's going on, the United States is about to get pounded with a second huge hurricane. Irma is about to hit Florida. We're recording this right around the time it's going to happen. There's another storm following that.
Jose,
which the wall should stop Jose.
Oh, you finally got one.
Yes.
Good for you.
Yes. But so anyway, you know, it's scary stuff. We've had a huge, huge storm. I don't want to play politics. I mean, all right, part of me wants to, but the decent person in me that rarely shows up.
Well, there's
no
reason to. I mean, now, these storms are, Harvey is just now clearing up. I watched this heartbreaking story. There was a rapper, his name's Bun B. He's from Houston, and he's shifted away from rapping and is more of a civic leader at this point in time. But he had a really kind of emotional interview explaining that you know, the people in there were people in Houston and in some of the different wards that weren't waiting for FEMA. They weren't waiting for the Red Cross. They were waiting for people like him and his crew to come and save them because they frankly didn't feel that FEMA or Red Cross was ever coming for them. And that relatively proved to be true. You know, people from Houston in the Houston area who know of some of these more downtrodden neighborhoods and are more familiar with them knew to, all right, we need to get boats here, right? All the boats are going down the main streets and they're going to the neighborhoods that are well known or whatever. And not necessarily based on race, but it's more economic driven. And so those less fortunate neighborhoods, that's where, you know, the non-FEMA Red Cross people were going. Part of that has to do with resources, but they were going there and they were finding people who had been trapped for, you know, 4 days, five right. days, 6 days, no electricity, no clean water, no nothing right. like that. You know, finding people clinging to their lives, hoping that someone would find them, hoping that no one forgot about them. And, you know, kind of you have to commend the different people, whether it was, you know, Bun B or J.J. Watt or, you know, Gerald Wallace or you know, some of the different guys.
Jerry,
you know,
Hughes, the Buffalo Bills defensive end, actually, he did another one. They didn't get J.J. Watt money, but
right, I mean,
Texan who
yeah,
who
I mean,
in.
Just I mean, not only just raising money, but people who actually physically went out and, you know, got in a boat.
Right.
And went through and just started grabbing people and getting them to safety. You know, he was telling this other stories of, you know, some of the places where people were staying, some of these churches and things like that, where there was only one bathroom. You know, there was, a male bathroom and a female bathroom. And, you know, you had people who couldn't make it to the bathroom and they were, you know, shitting themselves and, you know, everything else. And these are the conditions that they were stuck in. So this situation, better than Hurricane Katrina, you know, it was a better response across the board. But even a almost perfect response from the federal agencies and the different volunteer groups still means that there's still going to be a lot of tragedy and a lot of just, you know, broken lives that you're not going to be able to instantly put back together once the water goes
down. This is going to be a mess to clean up for a long time. But, I mean, look, neither of us have shied away from criticizing the federal government under Trump. To my knowledge, they've actually done a fairly good job in this case. So I will, you know, until I hear differently, I'm going to praise the federal government, and that does trickle up.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think FEMA learned something from Katrina. They learned
right.
something from Sandy. And so you give them credit for that. We got to be careful praising them, though, because, again, they didn't completely fuck it up, but
right.
there's still, you know, we still don't know the full effect of what happened, and we have another storm coming.
Yeah, and
I mean the reality is FEMA, the Red Cross, everyone involved in these sort of, you know, rescue organizations and situations and these different efforts, they're now going to be stretched to capacity.
Yeah.
Because now you have to get people and mobilize people from Texas to Florida.
Right.
Like, I mean, that has to be ready to transition almost instantly. And not only that, the storm, this Irma storm, it may head up the East Coast, you know, and hit up the Gulf, but it may hit up the East Coast. So you're talking about the Carolinas and things like that. And who knows how truly thin the different rescue efforts will be spread at that point in time.
And Florida is a totally different animal in terms of how to deal with it, because Florida is essentially, the entire state is at sea level. Like, the highest point in the state of Florida is under 100 feet above sea level. Mm-hmm. In fact, I want to say it's like 12. I could be wrong about that, but it's, you know, Texas, there's high ground to get to, even not high ground, but higher ground. Mm-hmm. You can get away from the water pretty easily. And Florida, you're a peninsula. You got water on both sides. Mm-hmm. And this storm is wider than the state of Florida.
Right.
It's scary stuff. So,
and I have a friend down there.
Oh, me too. I've been texting him.
Right.
He told me he's sticking it out, and I'm like, fuck.
My buddy too. He told me he's going to stay. you know, he's a smart guy. He's a proud guy. So I'm not gonna, you know, it's pointless to kind of force the issue.
Right. No, same thing. I don't want to argue with someone. Like,
right. But it's just like, I mean, it's horrible. I mean, I'm watching it from my end, and it's terrifying. You look at the storm, and it's just, it's a massive storm. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's huge. Oh, well, you know, I mean, the media says, like, okay, fine. But I mean, I can look at a radar, bro.
Yeah.
Like, the radar is not lying to me, and the storm is fucking massive. Right. Like, and if it shifts north, like, you are literally going to get raped in the ass by a storm. So I'd prefer if you got in your car and drove, or got in a plane and flew.
You know what, though?
Whatever.
Having lived in Florida and obviously not dealing with anything like this, but it was scary to me, because if you're in the southern part of Florida, you're 7 hours from getting out of Florida. I mean, you're a long ass way.
Right.
And you're never getting, like I said, the high ground. So you can't just head inland. You've got a long way to go. And yeah, I'm very scared for my friend.
You know, and listen, I hope that by the time we release this, we were able to, you know, storm
right.
passed. And, you know, I mean, the storm's supposed to hit Saturday and Sunday. So, you know,
we'll release it on Sunday.
Release it on Sunday. And, but I mean, you hope that it works out. And hopefully this is all fodder and they were right and we were wrong.
Yeah.
I definitely, this is one I don't want to be right.
So I don't want to politicize this, but I do know somebody who doesn't mind politicizing it. Your buddy and mine, Rush Limbaugh, talked about how this whole thing was he didn't say the whole thing. He made statements saying things like, the media tends to exaggerate these things. They try to send you into the store. It's a commercial interest, and the liberals are using it to promote their climate change agenda. And, you know, then he said, and I'm getting out of Dodge, and you know, so can I just find someone saying, fuck you, Rush Limbaugh? There.
You know, Rush Limbaugh has made a great deal of money on just
fear-mongering, hate-mongering.
Yeah, I mean, just being an asshole.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just being a pure, unfiltered asshole. And, you know, he really is kind of one of the fathers
and
of
a hypocrite
this.
And a liar and a scumbag.
Let's
not leave
those
out.
All of
and,
those things.
And a guy, right? Well, okay.
And you know, I typically try to, you know, rein you in with the name calling and things like that. And I'm not going to do that with Rush Limbaugh, because he is just, you know, I remember when he got fired from ESPN for saying that the only reason that people liked Donovan McNabb is because he was a black quarterback.
I think they said he only got the MVP because he was a black quarterback.
Yes.
Is that right?
Same difference.
Okay. Okay. Well, not just even why it was popular, but, oh, he didn't even deserve this praise based on his numbers. Like, fuck you, Rush Limbaugh. All right. Go ahead.
Agreed. So, I'm not telling you to watch it, but with him, it's just so disingenuous. It's so disingenuous because, one, he's another one, like Bill O'Reilly, who's admitted that he's a character on the radio.
Yeah.
He doesn't believe a lot of the shit that
yeah.
he says.
Oh, no, he knows how to stir things up.
It's about entertainment. He knows his base, all that other stuff. You know, I mean, he's even, it's just, and to me, it's frustrating and it's sad because the fact that he still has a base that believes everything that comes out of his mouth.
Right? I know, it's.
I mean, there are people who are going to, who listen to his show, who will sit there and go back and refute, you know, climate change and global warming and, you know, hurricanes are a myth and they're fake and that, you know, here's the funny thing. Tonight, Mark Levin was calling out Rush Limbaugh because he's like, listen, I may be a lot of things, but I know that hurricanes are real. I know that this hurricane is very dangerous. It doesn't matter what the media is saying. What the media is saying is right. Like, this is a dangerous storm. And if you live in certain areas, you need to get away. You know, like, I mean, he's just like, I've been in Florida through, you know, he said he tried to stick a hurricane out. I forget which one he listed, maybe Hugo something like that. And he said it was a mistake. And he said, even if only one out of every 20 hurricanes, you know, is as bad as they say it is, that's still one too many if it's your house that gets destroyed.
Right. And if you're in it, it's not your, you can rebuild a house. You can't
right.
rebuild
I
you.
Mean, so, I mean, in his exact words, and I can't believe I'm quoting Mark Levin, but
I can't either.
What's your life worth? You know, I mean, and so that's a startling statement.
Would you like me to answer what I think Rush Limbaugh's life is worth?
I'm pretty sure his bank account says it's worth a whole hell
it's actually
lot.
It was worth a lot of money on Earth. Now, you know, but what you said is the thing that frustrates me the most is he is never held accountable for his lies and his bullshit.
Jim? Well, the president of the United States is like says whatever the hell he wants.
True.
He said that Obama wasn't born here.
But I think
and
I
wasn't
think
held accountable.
Like,
and now he's
assholes like Limbaugh are why that works.
Okay.
Right.
But now, I mean, it's so far. I mean, like, it's
the toothpaste is out of the tube.
The toothpaste is out of the tube, and then has been melted, frozen, refrozen, melted, and punted all around the earth. Like, you're not going to get it back in the tube. And so, I think we still have to call their bullshit.
Absolutely.
We still have to, which is, I get annoyed because to me that's it's almost a waste of time, except for the fact that it's not because. Someone still has to call these people, for their bullshit. Someone still has to say, I know you do this every day. I know you do this on every show. But that being said, it's still a lie. It's still not true. You're still damaging people. You're still hurting people because people believe you and they go make bad situations worse based off of the things that you say. Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly,
Alex Jones,
and actually, I got to pull Bill O'Reilly out of there because he actually wasn't that bad.
No, he wasn't.
You know, I mean, he could be pretty obnoxious on certain things, but he wasn't nearly as bad as those other guys. Were just like Alex Jones, just literally makes shit up. He literally makes up things about aliens, outer space, devils, and ghosts, and mixes it with politics.
I've seen the frog people, Steve.
It's not even
sorry,
like,
I saw the fish people, not the frog people.
I'm sure. Well, remember the gay frogs.
The gay frogs and the fish people.
The gay frogs
and the
fish
people, yes.
Right. Like, and the funny thing is, his Alex Jones shit is so bad, it would actually make bad sci-fi movies that the Sci-Fi Channel would have to debate on whether they would put it on after Sharknado. It's like, I don't know. That might discredit Sharknado.
Sharknado. We need the stark reality of Sharknado to hold up. We can't have the Alex Jones files run next.
Exactly. So, you know, it's like, so people have to, we have to continue to call them out. You do a good job of that. I get annoyed with it. I like to brush past it. And you kind of pull me back on it. I think we have to be tactful in the way we do it, James. But... that being said, I think it still needs to be done.
It does. And so anyway, Limbaugh ended up splitting from Florida. So this thing you said that you didn't need, you didn't, yeah. So he was smart enough to get out of there and
grab the oxy.
And exactly. Grab the, get the hookers out of the, they don't have basements in Florida, but you know, round up the hookers, grab the oxy, and let's get out of Dodge. What do you say we wrap this up and come back with a follow-up show because we're right at an hour?
Okay. I've got more whiskey, so that's,
you've got more whiskey?
That's
all right. So let's close this out now. We're at Whiskey Congress on all social media. Hit us up. Please give us a rating on iTunes.
You can check us out on iHeartRadio. You can also listen to us on Stitcher. Pretty much anywhere we can get a podcast, you'll be able to find us. Just look for Whiskey Congress. And also check out our website, whiskeycongress.com. We try to write stories about, you know, various things that are in the news. It's hard to keep up because there's a lot of shit out there. But check us out on our website. You know, we're working on updating it and adding some things and bringing some things to life. So feel free to hit us up on Twitter if you have any suggestions.
All right, man. Let's shut this down and then take a minute and get it back up.
All right.
Later.